Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready to ride?
Tuning in to Injust Us, the show that shares stories of injustice and allows listeners to ask questions and seek advice. Each week, we feature guests personally affected by the criminal justice system and or making a difference in the Black community. My name is Melinda Robertson, and I am your host and member of the WPGR All-Female Radio Network. I'm the founder of Black Mothers for Justice, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit created to be a support system for mothers with children wrongfully or rightfully incarcerated. A Black Mother's Guide, How to Survive the Criminal Justice System, is now available. It was written out of necessity because statistics show that one in every three Black boys will go to prison in their lifetime. This much-needed book provides information about arraignment, bail, Miranda rights, public defenders, etc. The purpose is to educate and enlighten mothers about the judicial process. Please visit www.blackmothersforjustice.com to order your copy today. Tonight's featured guest, Jovan Davis, is the deputy director of the Love More Movement, Incorporated, and owner of the Love More Brand, LLC. He is also a member of Cure the Street in D.C. and making a difference in the lives of many. Please help me welcome this rising community leader and activist, Jovan Davis, to the show. Hello, Jovan. How are you this evening?
Hello. Jovan? Hello?
Jovan, I can't hear you. Show, my brother. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I apologize for the technical difficulties, my brother. So, tell us a little bit about the Love More movement.
Yeah, so at first it was called Higher Hopes and Outcomes, which is a nonprofit organization here in Washington, D.C. But when we was working with the community and working with youth that was coming from DYS, we realized that in order to have hope, you need love. So we changed it from Higher Hopes to the Outcomes to the Love More movement.
Oh, nice. I like the concept. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's just the Love More movement just pretty much, you know, build safe and brave spaces to facilitate healing and resilience with youth, adults, and seniors in our community.
What inspired you to start such a movement?
That was pretty much it. But when we have our real talk sessions, consist of high-risk individuals that were from the community or from different communities across Washington, D.C. And we'll probably have 15 to 20 individuals, and we'll pretty much create this brave space. These individuals, they'll feel vulnerable, and any information that they've been suppressing, they're allowed to share with the group, and whatever is shared in the group stays in group. And it's pretty much like that they won't be judged. But while we're having these sessions, individuals were scared to compliment each other. You know, they were scared to whatever they was going through, they were scared to share that at first. You know, so when they greet each other, it was always, oh, what's up, nigga? Oh, what's up, B? You know, and it was just like, how can we change that to when we greet each other as peace king, peace queen, you know, and just try to change that, like change the norm, you know, and make love cool again. And some of them were stating that they don't plan on living past 21. So anything that they wanted to accomplish, they tried to accomplish before they turned 21. So they were kids at the age of 16. They was getting their face tatted. You know, they were just trying to accomplish everything that they possibly think that they could in life before they turned 21. But it was like they didn't have nobody to talk to. They didn't have guidance. They didn't have nobody that was showing them love. And due to these individuals living in group homes and coming from group homes, it was like if someone tell you that they love you, then love means that you're going to leave them. You know, because they was bounced around so much in the group homes that these individuals wasn't used to, you know, someone standing around for a long time. So it's like having that thought, and they know that you're going to leave them, so they don't want to share as much with you. They don't want to be as open with you because they only got you for a short period of time. So that's when we do that. You have to, you know, like it won't be overnight. You have to work with individuals. You have to show them love over a period of time. And that was pretty much it right there. And a guy had shared in the group one time that hate is the new love. I was like, damn. Like, how did we get that disconnected from our community? That hate is the new love.
Yes. You know,
and it's like, how can we put love back into the community? And how can we make love cool again? So that's how the whole love movement came about.
Yes. So you mentioned high-risk individuals. Who exactly is considered high-risk?
So high-risk individuals are individuals in the community that's committing the crimes or that have a violent track record.
Okay. Yes. Wow. So during the pandemic, you facilitated a Love More and Live in Peace red light project that brought gang members together from different quadrants of D.C. to make a truce to stop the killing. Why was this important to you?
It was important to me because the guys that was involved in the conflict, I watched grow up, you know, and I knew these guys personally. And I guess you can say it was kind of like survivor's guilt for me. You know, I just feel like I was one of the ones that made it out of my neighborhood and that I could, see what the world has to offer, not just my community or Southeast just has to offer. You know what I'm saying? Like I seen like so much that changed the way that I think and receive information. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't want to. It was more than Sixth Street to me. It was more than Southeast to me. And I feel like nobody before me, you know, showed me the way. Like, nobody for me told me, okay, don't do this, don't do that. Like, I always learned from their mistakes without them having to tell me anything, you know. And even though I did experience some of those things, and I feel like that experience was the best teacher for me, you know. And that's all I needed to see, like, a couple people make that mistake, and I wouldn't do it. You know, like, I seen how drugs make individuals react, so I never did drugs. You know, I grew up in a household where it was smoking and drinking, and I seen what went down in my household, you know, and the long-term effects that it had on my household and people that knew my family, whatever the case was, and it was like I never wanted to drink. So it was like I felt like that I caught on late. And I had that relationship in my community, whereas though if they just listen to half of what I say, that they'd catch on early, you know. And that was like, so I try to use my platform to, cause and then it's like they grew up together, they went to the same school, they mothers, and was real close. They knew where everybody lived at, so it's like, why y'all beefing? What y'all beefing for? And I just want to have a conversation to get everybody to have a conversation. So that's what really empowered me to try to bring everyone together.
Yes, it's so necessary and so needed, especially during these times with the gun violence being what it is. It's nationwide, but definitely we have D.C. has its fair share. Has the Red Light Project been successful in stopping the killings? And if so, in what way?
Yeah, so the we was dealing with the conflict between individuals on 6th Street and 4th Street, you know, and we did life skills, we did conflict resolution, and we also did transformational classes. And we did it 3 times a week, and it was with the high risk and at risk youth. The at risk youth are the ones that have access to a weapon, you know, and he'd be easy influenced by the high risk, you know. So we grabbed up the most individuals who had the most influence on their street, you know, and just had them talk it out and communicate. And that's one of the hardest things that I found out, that is one of the hardest things to do is communicate. And so once they figured out how to communicate and what to communicate, like, it became easy, you know, to for them to be like, man, look, I was just now on a call with so-and-so, and then his peers who he had behind him, they wanted to get on the call. Then their family wanted to get on the call. So now it becomes cool and it becomes normal to get whatever is off your chest, you know. And we always tell them communicate, because it's like once you suppressing all of your trauma and whatever you're going through, then you become depressed. So you wanna vent to have so whoever you can and make sure you're getting the right advice, you know. And we created that brave space on Zoom, and we bought everyone tablets so they can, you know, tap in and join with us 3 times a week. So whoever wanted to join, you know, people donated tablets. We even bought tablets for some of the individuals. Got some individuals Wi-Fi, and we got them DoorDash so they can get lunch, or Cash App the money so they can get lunch while we're doing the calls, you know. So it was that type of space, to the point where, as though when we asked them, what are y'all beefing for, they said that they don't know, you know.
Wow.
And there was a lot of things that was going on in between these sessions that we had to mediate. A lot of conflict was going on, we had to mediate, and we was mediating these situations on Zoom with both sides. And at the end of the call, or the end of the Zoom session, they were telling each other that they love them. And I think that right now, from that conflict, we had like 140 plus days without a shooting from that conflict right there. But as far as outside conflict, we had individuals come by and they were shooting, I think, like 2 days ago. But that was like some outside conflict, and it wasn't between the two groups that we was working with.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's amazing. Yes, 140-something days. Yes, that is good. That's awesome. So, listen, I believe we have a caller. Caller, are you ready? I think we have a caller that would like to speak with you. Caller, are you there?
Okay. Oh, how you calling? That one. Call in. I know you can call in that month. Let me see. Let me look on this page and see if he got the...
Hello?
If he's...
Hello. Okay, callers, please remember to press 1 if you'd like to join the conversation and speak with Javon. So, Javon, you're also involved with Cure the Streets. What is Cure the Streets, and what is its mission?
The Cure the Streets is a violence prevention program under the Attorney General, and we work to reduce gun violence in D.C. Cure the Streets is like a data-driven public health approach, and they treat violence as a disease. And like, you know, as a disease before it outbreak, we get to interrupt it, treat it, and stop it from spreading. You know, so we feel like that if we know that a conflict is going on, we'll be able to interrupt it, you know, try to mediate it, just treating it, and stop it before it go any further, and stop any retaliations, you know. So that's what Cure the Streets is.
Okay, how does one become a part of Cure the Streets? Like, do they just join? I mean, you know, the at risk and high risk, you gotta seat them, or how does that work?
Yeah, so in the community that Cure the Streets is placed in, you have to have a good relationship with individuals, and you have to be a credible individual. And when I say credible, is an individual that never told, that wasn't never had as a young, as I say, you know, like you have a clean background, clean paperwork gotta be clean, you know, and
okay.
You gotta have great relationships inside the community.
Okay. Well, okay, nice. I love it. It's so necessary. I wonder if they need to have these in all the inner cities, because clearly it's making an impact, just to help change their way of thinking. So you grew up in the streets of D.C., right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, and being, you know, I grew up in Southeast myself, so it's kind of hard, especially for a black man, not to fall prey to the streets. How were you able to avoid the pitfalls that so many don't?
I'd say first, just learning how to defend myself. You know, like even growing up in grade school, it was just petty fights. You know, fifth grade, sixth grade, it was always. I went to P.I. Harris Elementary, so it was always something. You know, growing up, and it's like you had to defend yourself, and like I always was able to defend myself and hold my own, you know what I'm saying? So it's like first you have to defend yourself, be able to defend yourself, and then you have to just respect everybody and everything around you, you know, and just learn how to move from that. And I just watched, like I said before, I just learned from other people's mistakes, you know. If somebody said something out the way or did something to somebody, I just want to know why that happened, so I know not to do it, you know. And I just pretty much move accordingly, for real, mind my business, and I just stay focused on me. I don't bother nobody. Never did.
Mhm. Yes, that's a good motto to have. Unfortunately, so many people still fell prey to the drug game, you know, the fast money. And I guess you would say that those were pretty much, well, I wouldn't agree. I wouldn't say that they were just the at-risk and high-risk people, because I know people from, you know, strong families, both mothers and fathers, that eventually got hooked up into the drug game, be it selling or using. So there was just such a blessing that wasn't your story. So where does your passion to bring peace to the streets come from? You have it seems like you have the passion that you have. Where does that resonate? Was it your upbringing, or was it a situation, or just that's just who you are? Just to bring the peace.
Yeah, I say, it's who I am. But as I got older, like I say, it was pretty much just survivor's guilt. You know, I just felt like that's what I had to do. You know, especially when you go away for 4 years of school, you come back, it's still the same people out there. Then 15 years later, it's still the same people out there, and they looking at you like, damn, you made it. You made it out the hood. And I just feel like it's my job to come back and, you know, help out where I can. You know, I think that's really what it is. It's just survivor's guilt. And, like, people always tell me, like, man, bro, you don't even need to be out there. You don't need to be on Sixth Street. Or you don't need to be still out there doing this and that. But it's just, like, these my men. Like, I watch them grow up. They're like family, you know. And some of them, like some of them are family, so... It's just, I just feel like that I need the help, and I never growing up, you know, like I never had that big homie. I never had that OG, you know what I'm saying, who was really showing me the way, real for real. You know, so.
With your father in the house?
Yeah, he wasn't in the household with me. My father was around, you know. I talked to my father every day. But I was like one of them kids, like he tell me do something, it was like, all right, you did it, so let me learn, you know what I'm saying? But like my father was always, like I was with my father yesterday, you know what I'm saying? He always dropping jewels on me, dropping jams. So
yes, because so many of your peers that are in the street didn't have that. You know what I mean? And I believe that a lot of times the young brothers are just searching, you know, for they are running these streets and stuff when they don't know where they came from, you know, because there's so many absent fathers. So you are definitely blessed in that regard, in so many regards. That is such a blessing. So you are also the owner of the Love More brand. Is that a clothing line?
Yeah. It's a clothing line.
Okay, so what kind of apparel do you sell?
We sell sweatsuits, T-shirts, hats, masks. And I just now created the shoe, you know, from scratch. I had a guy pretty much draw it up for me. I sent it in to get it digitized and, you know, been working with different manufacturers getting samples. So it'll be shoes in like a couple of weeks. So we'll start selling shoes, hats, clothes, sweatsuits, T-shirts, jackets.
Oh, such a blessing. So what school did you go to? You said you went to college?
Yeah, I went to P.I. Harris for elementary. I went to Eastern for 9th and 10th grade. I went to Ballou, 11th and 12th, and I went to Virginia State. And I graduated from Virginia State, and now I'm going to go to Bowie State. And next semester, I'll be enrolled in Bowie State to get my master's.
Oh, yes, that's what I'm talking about. How old are you?
34.
Wow. Go ahead, young king. I love it. I love it. It's been so good to see a young brother with so many goals and aspirations and doing it. You know, it's just such a blessing. In addition to all the other hats that you wear, you are also a life coach and co-author of a holistic curriculum, Transformational Life Coaches and Healing Leaders. What does that curriculum consist of, and what inspired you to become a life coach?
Yeah, I say Dr. Bruce Bonilla. You know, he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. You know, especially when I was younger, and he always just be sharing things with me. You know, about just how to form LLCs, how to form nonprofits, like how to set a nonprofit up, how to go after grants, you know, and what credentials you will need to do this type of work, what credentials you will need to do that type of work, you know. So it was like him just really already being there and laying that roadmap down there for me like that. It's like that's what inspired me. And like he believed in me when I really didn't have nothing for real, you know. So we just been, you know, grinding together for a long time, and he just was showing me the way. So once I got in that arena where it's like, okay, now I'm here, but I can't do this type of work unless I get this certification, you know. It's just knowing, you know, like knowing what steps you have to take to do certain type of speaking engagements. So to receive this type of grant, what type of classes that you will need. And that's like how I became that. But Dr. Bruce Rennell, like here, black psychologist in this area, and he do a lot of work in the community. So it's like, man, if we need to do these healing stations, we need to, you need to do X, Y, Z and become a life coach, right? So I'm like, man, why everything a life coach, you know, because at first, I was thinking like a counselor, or a case manager, you know. But the youth their reaction to that wasn't a good reaction, because they looking at like my case manager, like you're not about to, like I'm not a case.
Right.
Like they was more receptive to being a life coach better than a case.
Right,
than just being another case.
The word case in itself has like a negative connotation to it. So
exactly.
I can, yeah. So that was good strategy. Yeah, that's real good. Wow. And so they have been receptive, and I'm sure they're receptive to you also because you're so young, and you are not only talking the talk, but you are walking the walk. They can see it. You know what I mean? And that right there is just, I think that has a lot to do with them being able to receive, you know, to receive the messages that you stand by, because you're not just talking about it, they see it in your walk, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and that's what it's about, you know, that's what it's about for real. Like, we don't have nobody in our community that look like us, that's qualified to do the work that we're doing, or we don't have no black psychologists like Dr. Bruce Brunell, who in the community you can talk to, and he can give you that same advice if you went anywhere else, you know. So it's like, for somebody that look like me, I'd be more open to them instead of someone who don't, you know. So.
How did you connect with him? How were you able to connect with him?
Man, he was working with me since I was like, how old? I was like 17, 18. And I had me and my friend Twan introduced me to him, and we was doing a lot of work with him, you know, and he pretty much was just trying to show us the way, and I just stuck with it, you know, even when there wasn't nothing going on, you know, I was just still just calling him and just getting advice just to clear my head, clear my mind, and it's like we've been tight ever since then.
Such a blessing. So more like he like a mentor. You're a mentor, huh?
Yeah, he more like family. You know, it ain't.
Oh,
I can't even put a word on it. No.
That's a blessing, because the thing about it is that what he poured into you is obviously what you're pouring into the community. You know what I mean? You're pouring back into the community. So that's a win-win. So you are also the father of three. What does fatherhood mean to you?
Man, it pretty much means everything for real, you know, and like that's the only hood that I really be proud to claim for real, for real. Like when I first had my first son, and like I got arrested, and it was just like, damn, like now my son could possibly be growing up without me, you know, and like ever since that day, I realized that I'm not living for myself no more. So I had to think the way I change it. I had to change the way I think, and I'm living for the kids, man. You know, and like whatever I do, I always want to make sure like it aligns with my kids being safe, or my kids, you know, having a good life, and my kids having what I didn't have growing up. You know, so whatever that was that I didn't have, I make sure that they had it. So like that's like 99% of what I'm doing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you did experience a brush with the law, but nothing really serious, huh?
I had a bunch of serious stuff, but it was just like I had enough money to have a lawyer, you know, or like I was just blessed not to get charged with anything to the point where I had to be gone for a long period of time. You know what I'm saying? I done been locked up numerous of times, but it was just, I never had to do no bid, no long bid or none of that.
That is such a blessing. That is such a blessing because, you know, we know how unjust and unfair the judicial system is in this country. So you are definitely blessed in that regard. You were speaking on when you were talking about what fatherhood means to you, because at the end of the day, we only get out of our children what we put in them. So I commend you for being the father and taking it as seriously as you do, because we as parents, you know, we don't get a book doesn't come with this, but you know, so many black men walk away from their children. So it's good to see and hear that a young brother like you takes fatherhood so seriously, and understanding that the choices that you make will have an impact on them. And that's a message that I think that doesn't resonate with a lot of people. So I commend you, my brother, and I hope there's some other young brothers out here that are fathers that will follow your blueprint, because it's so necessary in our community. So you work with a lot of special populations. Oh, let me go back and say, callers, please press 1 to join the conversation. Please press 1 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. So you work with special populations, such as the disabled, returning citizens, victims of violent crime, youth in transition, and the LGBTQ community. What kind of work have you done with them, and why is it important to you to work with these special populations?
Yeah, the type of work that we do, you know, consists of our methodology about creating, you know, the safe and brave spaces, which we call healing stations. And these are the individuals that are survivors, you know, of trauma to heal, you know. So it's like they have a lot of trauma. And these healing stations, are for the people that do have trauma and are trying to heal and are the most vulnerable, you know. And it's just creating like healing courses and the type of framework that we do for transformation.
Oh. Oh, nice. Wow. You guys are cover a lot of different things. Is this with your with the transformational life coaches and healing leaders, that center?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So being a life coach, what do you like most about it?
Man, I like the part like the most where I can actually, you know, help these individuals and then help them start to see the end goal and actually finish it. You know, I think that's what motivates me to keep doing this work, you know, to really seeing the job well done.
Yes, it's so necessary. So let me ask you this. What, if anything, do you think that we as a community can do to stop the gun violence in the city?
One thing is just help change the norms. You know, when something, first of all, just holding yourself accountable and holding others accountable. And then it's really changing the norms, you know. So when something happens in the community, far as gun violence, you know, it needs to be known that the whole community is denouncing gun violence, you know, that gun violence is not cool, gun violence is not normal, you know, and really show the community that it's people that's in the community that really care about what's really going on. It's people that really care about the victim. It's people that really care about the perpetrator, you know, and it's really about showing them love and seeing how you can reach that individual and seeing what they need, you know. And some people just think calling the police, sitting in their window calling the police on them 1,000 times and they getting locked up 1,000 times, like that's going to change something, you know. But it's really getting to know that individual, find out how you can help and provide those individuals with resources, you know, the tools to navigate through whatever they're going through.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Do you think getting the guns off the street, do you think they would ever consider, like, turning in the guns? Like, a couple years ago, Union Temple Baptist Church, where I attend, they had a turn your guns in drive where people can just turn in guns without any questions and stuff like that. Do you think anything like that is even something that would be successful? As it turns out, that one didn't. I mean, it wasn't, but I don't know. If something like that is something that should be considered down the line, especially coming from, you know, somebody like you that's, you know, that knows the streets and stuff like that, and, you know, you are involved with, you know, helping people make a truce and stuff like that. Do you think that's something that they would ever even consider?
I don't know for real. Like, they're probably considered, but it's just like the reward has to be greater, you know, to doing that. Like, I'm not turning in my weapon just to make $10, $12 an hour. You know, I turn in my weapon to make 60, 50 grand a year, you know. If they can promise these youngers out here that if they do that and provide them with the proper resources and the right career, not like just a job, the right training, you know, for the career. But it go hand in hand, though. It go hand in hand. It's like one of them things that, like I know one time, you know, if an individual was to turn in his weapon, and then they like, okay, well, this weapon murdered this lady's son, You know what I'm saying? Like, how can we tell her we got the weapon, but we can't do nothing to the individual who turned it in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it go hand to hand for real. But I don't know. And then these individuals, they had to be ready. You know, like, it's not just about the resources. Like, these individuals have to be ready to really work. You know, so what's the steps before they get that career? You know, and some of them probably don't have the patience, and some of them probably don't have the skill set to even do that type of job.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like how will we know who's ready? You know, how we get them ready before that? You know, so it's like I think it's possible, but it's like a whole lot of things just have to come in play before you just turn your guns and walk away. You know what I'm saying? But
right. I mean, and the reason why I ask is because, you know, we hear so often so many innocent babies have been killed. I mean, they are just, some of these youngins are just reckless with these guns and stuff, you know. And I grew up in the late 70s and early 80s in Southeast and stuff, you know. And back in the day, they had killings, but they also had they had rules to it. You know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't just shoot in an open crowd. I mean, if the man was with his wife or something like that, you know, his wife and babies and stuff like that were off limits. It's just a different time today, and it's heartbreaking to see so many children nationwide killed, you know, 8, 7, 6, 10, you know what I mean? It's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, that's because like these guys now, they don't think, you know, they just acting off of emotion, and they go to 0 to 60 real quick, you know, and it's like they don't care if they're on camera, they don't care if the whole community saw them, you know. It's like they get a rush now. Some of them need an identity, some trying to be cool, you know, and you know, just working with them is just finding out what cool is, you know, just redefining what cool is for real. Like, how can we redefine cool? And that's how, like, the brand really came about, like, just trying to redefine cool and make love cool again.
Yes, because, I mean, I think it also has something to do with the fact that they tend to glorify prisoners. They tend, you know what I mean? They try to make it seem like that's a badge of honor, but there's no guns in prison.
Man, that's what I be saying. Like, it ain't. It never was a badge of honor for me. Like, I feel stupid. You know, I done sold drugs too, and I done got caught, and I done did this, and I got caught, and it's just like, damn, evidently you not good at what you're doing, because you just keep getting caught, whether it's small or big, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, only until they facing a life sentence, or once they really get caught up in a conspiracy, then they like, oh, nah, I don't want to get locked up. Take him. You know,
right.
And I'm talking about
getting life sentences.
Yeah, and they just don't know. You know, they just don't know, and like that's not like that conversation is not being had. You know, it's so many people that are snitching right now, that's in these communities, and they peers condone it. You know, like, oh, he ain't snitch on me, so he good money. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. people be out here condoning. Like, that's one thing I never did. Like, I figured, like, you snitch once, you'll snitch again. You know?
Right, but what I'm saying is, if you were man enough to commit the crime, why you have to snitch? Why do you just take responsibility for your actions? You know, a lot of times people want to throw other people under the bus to save their own selves, which is, I guess that's just the way it goes. I think they need to have some classes on what jail really is. I think they need to have some real live talks about what they witness and what goes on behind them bars to, you know, instill some fear in these youngest hearts that's out here, that, you know what I mean? Because they tend to glorify, yeah, man, I just did a, you know, 10-year bid, it wasn't nothing. Yeah, you need to talk about all them people that you seen get stabbed or get their manhood taken away, or talk about those things to try to let these youngins know that it's not somewhere, it's not no vacation.
Yeah.
You know, I think those conversations really need to be had. So when I was reading your bio, I see that you said an old head once said to you that the greatest gifts never realized were in the graveyard. Why do you think that statement resonated with you the way it has?
Because it's like so many people died with a purpose, you know, and they never got a chance to, you know, show the world what they really had. They never got a chance to show their gift, you know, to use their gift. And most of them had pride. Most of them died with it. You know, most of them had gifts, never got to use it, and now they're in the graveyard. You know what I'm saying? Especially as it's like so many younger people, and now it's starting to be so many young females that's dying. You know, over the last two years, I've seen that it was numerous of females that was killed, you know, or passed away. And it's like, damn, they were 17, 16, 6 years old, and they never really got a chance to really live their life. They never got a chance to really, you know, introduce themselves to the world and live the life that they was meant to be, you know. And I feel like that's always going to be the case if you don't have a premise. You know, you always have to have a solid foundation, stand for something, you know. And if you can't, no matter what you know, like I was probably like a couple years ago, I was watching what was it? I forgot the name of the cartoon, but it was pretty much the Three Little Pigs. But I forgot the new cartoon, and it was like, damn, like I never really saw these messages in these cartoons when I grew up, when I was watching it, you know. And I found out that when they was building their house, the foundation wasn't strong, you know, so it was easy to blow their house down. You know, you build a weak foundation out of straws, you get your house blown down. But once you build it right, it's solid, no matter what happened, you know. No matter, you're going to stand through the toughest times. You're going to stand through that process. And if you make it through that process, I feel like that you made it out. But some people, foundation, no matter what it is, you know, no matter if it's the streets, their personal life, their relationship, foundation, not as strong. So it's easy to be manipulated. It's easy to cut in to somebody's wife or cut into somebody's fiance or girlfriend nowadays, because that foundation don't be right, you know. And like, a lot of people been through, you know, a lot, and they never really healed from it, you know. So it's like, if I'm used to an abusive relationship, I'm gonna think that every person I get in a relationship with is gonna be abusive. If I'm in a relationship where it was a lot of cheating, I'm thinking every female that I'm with is going to cheat on me. But until I heal and really have somebody to talk to and, you know, and get that off my chest, then I never be, you know, right again. And that's what's happened. Like, these people don't have nobody to talk to, you know, and their foundation is so weak that it's easy to, you know, knock them over, you know what I'm saying? So that's, like, really the moral of the story that I got with the Three Little Pigs. Always have a strong foundation.
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, one thing about it, when you have a weak foundation, you don't have anything to stand on. So I definitely agree with, so what's next for Mr. Jovan Davis and your many adventures?
Yeah, so with the nonprofits, we're going to be around the 37th community We're going to open up a healing station in the 37th community, 37th Street, Southeast. And we'll be doing work with that community, the seniors, the young adults. So we should be doing that in a couple months. And then on the brand side, you know, like I said, I'm coming out with my first sneaker from the ground up.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, and then I'm trying to get like a couple stores. I probably get a store, either in the Petersburg or Virginia Beach, Norfolk area, Portsmouth area. So like I'm trying to just start like expanding. So like that's my goals for the end of the year. So just try to accomplish that.
Okay, please tell the listeners how they can contact you, or if they want to purchase, go to your to the Love More brand and check out your clothing line.
My email is lovemorebrand@gmail.com. My online site is lovemorebrand.co. And if anybody need me, want to talk to me, man, my personal number is 703-477-9599. And, like, that's my personal phone number. So if anybody want to hit me up, you know, check in, tap in with me. I always ask, is always open. Feel free.
Wow. Well, I commend you for all that you're doing in the community. I'm just so proud of you. As a young black man coming up in D.C. and having a desire to give back to the community, it just means so much. You're laying a strong foundation for your children, and that's something that we should see more of. I wish we saw more of, but. One day, you know, one day at a time, you know what I mean? And you know what they say, you reach one, you teach one. So you are doing a phenomenal job with, with making a difference. So I just commend you. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been so good to sit down and hear your thoughts and process where you're going and what you've been doing. So I just commend you. I'm so excited about what's to come because you have a bright future ahead of you.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and good luck with everything. Jovan Davis is an example of a strong black man with a desire to make a difference in his community. As I just said before, through him, he has a bright and promising future ahead of him. It is my prayer that other young brothers will follow his lead and choose to become part of the solution. Next week's guest will be Ashley Taylor, the Vice President of Bullets for Life out of Chicago. If you have a story of injustice you would like to share, or would like to recommend a topic for discussion on a future show, please DM author Melinda Robertson across all social media platforms. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and we will be back at it again next week. Stay safe and be blessed. Peace.
Y'all ready to ride? You the latest and the greatest of your lineage. Makeup and clothes ain't you, that's what your image is. Here's what it really is, perception is direction. You receive what you perceive, what you give is what you getting. This lesson is the weapon that I already gave you. Fear not, draw your gun, your God, universe, nature. Game changer, your higher self is calling you. The vehicle for change is arrived, what you wanna do? Take a ride. any traffic stop. We could be shot down, and in the courts it's just us. Justice is not found. Roadblocks, checkpoints, and a lockdown. If you ain't strong, it won't be long before you knocked down. But there's another way. Turn up what these others say. You the most important thing you have to think about today. So here's what I'ma say. Listen while I'm rapping it. Your mind, that's a magnet. What you think, you'll attract it. So ask it to manifest the things that you really like. Friends that you really like. Not the hateful, silly type. Don't be deceived by greed. Here's what it's really like. Their body drives a car, but their mind rides a mini bike. You know the person that you be and ain't all of you. The vehicle for change is a rob. What you wanna do?
I don't hate